I was like, why is there a hole in the wall of the stall? Like, what is that hole? Was there something there? Was there not? Was that where the paper used to be? And then you realize, oh, it's something else.
Hello, I am Kay Anderson, and you are listening to Lost Spaces, the podcast that mourns the death of queer nightlife. Every episode, I talk to a different person about a venue from their past, the memories that they created there, and the people that they used to know. So, if you love episodes where I gasp a lot during the conversation, then this week you are in for a treat. And that's because I got a lesson or several lessons in the fine art of cruising. And I know I come across as a total hobag, right? And so it's going to be hard for you to believe me when I say this. But the whole thing about cruising in public toilets is really foreign to me. Like, I don't understand it at all. I don't know what the etiquette is. I don't know how it's done or how you make contact. But luckily for me, Matt Hawley from Matt Tales Podcast dropped by to tell me all about how it's done. And I think I'm in pretty good hands because Matt Tales is a show where he shares stories of his sexual experiences over the last 40 years. 40 years. So, you know, I'm hoping that he's picked a thing or two up in that time. In this episode, we talk all about growing up in a small town, the fine art of fuck buddies, and learning how to amalgamate both the vanilla and the slutty sides of yourself. Let's get into it.
I come from a time of cruising, and I come from a time, a different generation, where you didn't get to know each other, really. You either lived in a gay community in a big city, or you were in a smaller town or a place where you just cruised rest areas, and you met up in maybe the gay bar that was in an alley somewhere. So I don't think my initial gay sexual experiences were about relating to people and becoming friends with them or becoming close with them. They were very anonymous. And for many years were anonymous for me. And so I think I was trained myself or did whatever was available to me, which trained me to not be close to the men I was having sex with, that keep it kind of anonymous. And then the other thing is just personality wise, I think I am just someone that I like intimacy. It's funny, you know, all my stories seem so kind of not intimate in a way, but there is an intimacy to a lot of them in a way, depending on how you look at it. But I like being intimate with someone. I like getting to know my friends. I like knowing my partner. I'm very supportive of my partner. I've learned how to not be codependent because there's that too. I'm still learning, but I'm a pretty good partner, and I like to kind of go all in with someone. And I think the buck buddy thing for me challenges me. It challenges my idea of what sex is, and that it can be more casual, and that I don't have to kind of be in control of a bigger situation in order to enjoy it. It's a lot of my own issues that I've discovered about why I'm having a harder time. In the last couple of years, I've been able to do it because I've let go of some of that stuff, and I don't expect so much from people.
So what do you mean by control of the bigger issue?
I think, you know, any of us who've been through some PTSD, and I've been through some trauma in my life when it comes to men and sex and relationships, is that in any kind of sexual relationship, if it's totally anonymous to me, there's a certain kind of control in that, meaning like it comes and goes. it doesn't, you don't have to know anybody, you know, you don't have to be on your biggest, your defense is your safety of your immediate situation. It's not your emotions, right? Mm-hmm. And then in a relationship, you have time to work through those things. But a fuck buddy is a little bit hard for me. It's a gray area because you're close to them, but you're not close to them. you're free sexually with them, but you know them a little bit more than just their body. So it's something that I'm still working on. I mean, I have one. I've had one now for over a year and a half, still in Portland, and I'm here. But we have a really beautiful relationship. We have a beautiful friendship, and sexually we're very open. And when I go back there, we connect a lot. And so I'm learning to not, to understand the difference between the relationship and a fuck buddy, but I don't know. Any words of wisdom? Because I don't.
No, none at all. But so are you saying that there are things that you've been involved in and that have started off as being fuck buddies, but then have become mind fucks?
No, I've actually never had a fuck buddy become a relationship. I've had relationships start and as friendships, but not as fuck buddies. Like I've never had a fuck buddy. Like the one I'm in now could be, if we lived in the same place still, it probably would be. But no.
I like how you've interpreted me saying mind fuck as relationship. That's not quite what I meant.
Oh.
I just meant like this muddiness, where you're like, it can start off with this intention of it being a fuck buddy, and then feelings can come into it and you can get confused, and it's easier to end it rather than explore that. That's what I mean.
That's very true. That actually is very true. I've also learned to be less. I'm now that I'm almost 100 years old, I'm getting more accepting of other people, and my expectations are not lower because if they're lowered for the right reasons. I don't, what you get from someone, if they're present, that's the thing. If someone's present and they're giving you whatever they can give you, then that should be enough. And if you expect more from them, then that's where the control thing comes in. And that's where it's just not going to end well or go anywhere.
Yeah.
I'm learning that if someone shows up enough for you and is honest with you and you can be there with them at that point, that's a fuck buddy I would like to have. Mm-hmm. Or honestly, a relationship, any relationship at this point.
The logistics of a fuck buddy is a bit much as well. And what I mean by that is, so you usually meet like the first time when you have sex, and then you're like, we should do this again, right? And then when one of you is feeling horny, you message the other one and say, shall we meet up? And then if that person isn't feeling horny at that time, then they will say, oh no, sorry, I can't. Yeah. And then if that happens one or more times after that, it just completely fizzles out. You have to get your cycles together. It's just,
it really is true. And that's what, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. The one with the had a relationship, that really was odd too, because that really meant whenever he could. And that was another thing that I was like, that's not so comfortable for me. Yeah. And then the good one that I have and still have, even though it's a distance.
Shall we say hello to him?
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
That one, we are so much alike in how we think about things that the chances are that's our cycle, is our craziness is the same. Our craziness is the same. We like the same kinds of things, and we like the opposite of what we like. So I like certain things done and he loves to do it, and he likes certain things done and I love to do it, and we're in sync there. So and he's also 30, so the chances of him not being horny are really low. So I'm playing the odds. So
you've got the power there. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. So why don't we take a step back then? You talked earlier about coming from an era where it was just cruising. Mm-hmm. And you said, especially if you were in a small town, does that mean you grew up in a small town?
I did. I'm from a small town in upstate New York, in the sort of the west of the Catskill Mountains, an old factory industrial town that was, filled with immigrants, Irish, Polish, Italian immigrants. Off the boat back in the day. And these little towns were built around factories and factory workers. So it was a lower middle class town. We didn't know we were poor because everyone was the same. So it was a really kind of very sweet way to grow up. Town was very old fashioned in mostly good ways, but it was a small town. So being gay, it was the late 60s into all of the 70s. So there wasn't really much talk about being gay. Gay was something on TV that was happening in a city somewhere. There was no conversation about being gay. There was, like most small towns, then, or maybe still now, there was the gay hairstylist. There was the gay guy that worked at the department store. There was that sort of casting of gay guys.
And so then did you have a concept of homosexuality?
No, honestly, none. And obviously, you know this, but state the obvious, but there was no going online. I mean, it's hard to believe now, right, that you can't just go look something up. It's hard. It's really hard. It's even for me who grew up without any of that, I still am starting to forget.
How did anyone ever settle any arguments without Google?
Or, and create 10 more. How do we not stay angry all the time, you know, instead of just once in a while? I didn't have any reference at all. I mean, there was not even cable TV until I was almost in high school. So there wasn't new HBO, which was, you know, I would wait until my mom went to bed and then I would click it at night to see if there was some like naked scenes on it. That was the extent of, and so in that small town, there was nothing. So when I got past puberty, which was late 70s, around 1980, mm-hmm. and when I got over through, no one gets over that or through it very well. I also gained an enormous amount of weight in my teenage years. Another story. But I started to sense things. Like I was started to sense in a men's room, like a JCPenney in the mall. I would be like, why is the writing on the wall? Or what is that man's foot? I just started to could sense something. And then mostly in the department store bathrooms, that's the place where gay men would meet. Wow. In a small town or a rest area outside of town, which I didn't discover until I was older.
Yeah.
But the rest areas are the gay bars, you know, I mean, that's where everybody comes together. And so I just started to sense it a little bit, but I still had no, I had no knowledge of it at all until college. And I went to the university in Binghamton, which is mostly kids from New York City that would come up there. The locals didn't go to, I was one of 8 locals that got into this college, state college. And so when I got there, I was like, wow, my people, they're from New York and New Jersey and Long Island, and they like get theater and they're cool. And they like, they're not all making fun of each other and they have weird hair. It was the early 80s. So I'm like, oh my God, their hair is purple. And their coats are so cool. They look like flock of seagulls. Like, you know, like, it was like, my people, you know, and I was so excited. And then that first couple of months of college, I found the bathrooms. College bathrooms. Uh-huh. And they were like bathhouses. They were literally, this was the early 80s, 80 to 85, bathhouses.
And so how did you figure it out?
It's hard to imagine now that people would be so bold with phones and I guess, but there was a lecture hall at the university with a downstairs bathroom. And even during the day or in the evening, there was still some people around, and you would open the door and you would hear feet scattering like cockroaches. And it would be, you'd hear doors slam and things. And the guys were just fucking, I'm not exaggerating. They're like under the stall, against the sink. Yes. And the locals knew it was there. So like, it was just this like little orgy kind of going on quietly. And then I was like, what is this? And then I had my first foot tap, you know, and I actually lost my virginity on the men's room floor at the university. That is how I lost my gay virginity.
Your gay virginity?
Well, I had a girlfriend right after for a little while. But yeah.
Okay, let's not talk about her. I want to know about
the bathroom. No, yeah.
the foot tap thing.
Yeah.
See, I don't, like, I just don't think this, I mean, maybe it is a thing here and I'm just really naive, but is it that they put their foot all the way under your stall?
It goes like this. So you go into the stall.
Okay.
Their foot, this is the art of the foot tap. Their foot is positioned, like you can see it just a little too much. Like if they were sitting straight on the toilet. You would not be able to see their foot. They've put their foot out just a little and maybe turned it, not a lot, but just a little. So when you sit down and you see that, you're like, maybe, all right, maybe it's just some guy reading a newspaper, doesn't know where his foot is.
And he's just manspreading.
It's just manspreading. So you get in and you kind of like move around so you don't look too suspicious. And then you sit down and you put your foot the exact same way. Just that much from the wall, like you follow the lead and you put it the same way they do and you leave it there for a minute.
What? So their foot's coming into your stall and your foot's going into their stall?
Their foot's just at the, no, theirs is just at the edge of theirs and yours is now at the edge of yours. No one's committed
yet. Oh, okay, okay.
No one's like gone over the edge and committed yet. Everyone's playing it safe, but you've like positioned the same way. It's a sign. Mm-hmm. And then that person, once they see that, or you, if you want to be a little more aggressive, depending on how much time you have, you want to get that thing moving.
You might be in a hurry. Yeah.
You might be in a hurry. And so someone will just raise a toe and put it down in your shoe or sneaker. You just raise your foot and put it down, raise it and put it down a couple of times. 9 times out of 10, that foot will do the exact same thing that you just did. And it only has to happen once. And once that happens, you're like, and here we go.
And then do you have like a thumb war between your feet?
Okay, well, then you tap it again. But when you tap it, you kind of move it towards the middle. And they put theirs. They move it, tap it towards the middle. And then everyone has their own technique. I find it very sexy when you go all the way and you touch them. See, I am an intimate person. I love intimacy.
So it's a bump rather than an overlap.
It's a bump. It's a bump.
Yeah. Okay.
And then once that bump happens, you can do a couple of things. One, some guys will just literally come forward if they feel like it's safe and the noise mm-hmm. is down and there's no one there, it's safe. They will literally come forward on their knees and slide their dick underneath the stall wall. Or if you want a little more reassurance, you can put your hand under the stall and take their hand. You can like start there a little bit.
And then do what with it?
Well, you just sort of like you're... See, you're the guy that doesn't have a lot of time.
Your hand. Well, I don't need this.
You're like, I don't really want to take a long walk in the park with you. I want if my dick sucked, basically. So it's a little extra intimacy. It's for the needy. For the needy. So then you do that, or you can pull the hand down, or they'll pull you down. Anyway, it's just an extra step, but you end up kind of knee to knee. Or someone goes first, or sometimes you just kind of go down and position yourself. Not under the wall. You both get down, and then whoever kind of wants to go for it first will kind of put their face down, and then you know what happens next.
I think so. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But see, I think this is why it doesn't happen here, because the stalls are not that far off the ground, so you couldn't fit. Oh. Like you could fit your foot under, but you couldn't really fit anything else underneath.
Oh,
like
wow.
You couldn't get low enough, so then you could push your dick under.
Right. Wow, that's interesting.
So don't come to the UK.
Yeah, they're all straight engineers. So, and then the other thing that used to be very, and I guess these are back because the kids love cruising now. It's like they're posting cruising on Twitter and everyone's posting pictures of the cruising. And I'm like, if you're posting pictures of your cruising, it's not the same thing. The whole idea of cruising is not necessarily recorded.
Yeah.
But the other thing is the glory hole, which that's the big clue for me when I was young. I was like, why is there a hole in the wall of the stall? Like, what is that hole?
Yeah.
Is there something there? Was there not? Was that where the paper used to be? And then you realize, oh, it's something else. And so if there's one of those, which was a little it wasn't as common because it was so sexual. And I think if it was a school, they had to repair it. And if it was a store, they had to repair it. And I went into the lecture hall, that same lecture hall bathroom. I went in and there was a guy with a duffel bag. I could hear him with a hand drill. drilling. And I was like, I knew someone had to make them. I just never stumbled onto a construction site before. I never was like a glory hole engineer. And he literally had it and he was sweeping it out. He was sweeping up the wood or whatever it was. And he was like, he was doing the work of the people. He was working for the people.
Kids, this is what happened before Grindr.
There you
history
go.
Lesson.
It's really true.
That's incredible. Wonder if he was like getting any satisfaction from that hole, or if he just saw it as a community service to go from bathroom to bathroom and drill holes and then move on to the next.
The poor janitors, like the poor custodial crew. Like, what the fuck is going on in the men's room? Because remember, they couldn't Google it either, nor did they want to ask anyone, because this is a big thing, Kay. Back in the day, and I try to explain this to the kids, and it's hard for them to understand. We also didn't talk about any of this. We didn't talk. Mm-hmm. No one talked about it. There was no, like, chat boards. There was no place to say, like, oh, in my school that happens too. Or, you know, I'm a parent who's concerned that this is happening in our schools. Nobody talked about it.
Well, like, here's a DIY video for drilling a hole into a bathroom wall.
Right. And then also just on the people that would be upset about it now or would shut it down, no one told them. There was no conversation about what those holes might be. No, my parents were going to not bring it up at the dinner table. No one chatted about it.
But is there like the added shame there of if you know what the hole is, then maybe you've used the hole. So just ignore that the hole is there.
I think there was a shame in discussing this at all. And that applied to the rest areas as well. I remember in the 90s, I first started to see these little news four at 6 o'clock, the local rest area. What's going on out there at the local rest area? Like before, like your husband's out there. That's what's going on with it. But until even the mid 90s, it was embarrassing. It was embarrassing to even bring those things up because it was an accusation then. It was an accusation. There was no proof. There was no arguments. There's no chat rooms. There's no one screaming at each other on Twitter. There was no conversation. And that's another thing that I tell younger gay guys now about that time, which was it's not just a lack of information that we had or a lack of communication. It was less chatter. Do you know what I mean? Like, we weren't overstimulated with 1,000 things a minute.
Think pieces about everything. Minutiae of our lives. But so are you saying that's a good thing or are you saying that's a bad thing?
I'm saying it's why we were able to cruise more easily without anxiety. We had a thrill more than we had anxiety. We didn't know the 200 things that had gone wrong in the world. Like there was, you know, one time you can go ahead and search cruising and now you'll find that the 3 times someone was killed doing it in Australia, which 2 of those may not even be true, or we didn't have any constant chatter or voices or too much information in our heads. We were calmer, if that makes sense. We were like not as stimulated by all these things so that we weren't on our phones when we cruised. You would put on your sexiest thing and you would go out quietly into the world and it would be a much quieter, more sensory moment. It would be smelling and listening and touching. It would be quieter, if that makes sense.
As opposed to the sensations that people experience now, which are...
Well, I think, you know, you Google where the cruising places are, and then you go there, and you've been on your phone already, and your mind is going really quickly, and you keep checking your phone, or someone's recording it, or you're worried someone's going to be recording you, whatever you do in the bushes, or you've read that someone in a park wants this happened to someone, or there's just not the same stimulation happening, and you didn't post after, I just went to Central Park and I got the best blowjob. You know what I mean? You didn't post it on your stories.
You write it in your diary.
You wrote it in your damn diary. Or you recorded it when you're in your late 50s and you make a podcast out of it. But there is something about the calmness, the lack of overstimulation that made things a little bit more exciting. You know, like when you lose one sense, your other one gets stronger. Well, we used all of them.
So your like cum sniffing skills have dampened. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, because of the damn phone. I blame the phone for not being...
I can't figure out where all the cruising spots are within a 50-yard radius of me, like I used to.
Exactly. It's not just because of my old senses. My senses have gotten older and dull. It's because of the damn phones.
And I think it's really interesting that you've chosen the word calm. Do you think that applies to just all facets of our lives?
I'm not sure. That's a great question. Gosh, if I can answer that one. I guess personally, I would say yes. It does apply. Like I downscaled my life considerably in the last few months in order for me to test that experiment. So I'll let you know. I got rid of 95% of my stuff. I'm living very simply and traveling around. And that was my attempt to see if that was true.
But you took your phone with you.
It's right here right now. I'm actually holding it because I can't. Yes. If I put it down, it might run away. My neediest relationship.
So how are you doing this exactly?
What's your point, Kay? Anyway, you're stop calling me on the truth.
I'm not pointing anything out. I'm sorry.
You're just stating the facts. So I will say this. I am trying for, you're going to laugh. I'm trying for, this is how bad it is, for 2 hours a day, and it can't be less than 1 hour increments. So it can be 2 hours together or 1 hour separately, two 1 hours separately. Okay. Yeah. To put this down and not check it for any reason at all.
And this does not count when you're asleep.
No, this is when I'm awake. This is waking hours. Because, and the other thing is I've signed off of Grindr. I've signed off of them for a while. It's just...
Wait, you've signed off, but you haven't deleted the app.
Correct. Well, my premium doesn't run out until December, so I'm paying for it anyway.
Wow, no. Wow, yeah, we're just, yeah, just, why would you?
I'm just being thrifty here. That's all. I said experiment. I didn't say it was going to work. But I have.
And like, you know, I am just as addicted to my phone and to technology. Yeah. And so I know I sound very judgmental, but that's just my natural tone.
No, not at all. I'm trying to call myself on the same stuff. I'm just going to call you first. You go right to the heart of it. I actually like the truth, as painful as it can be. I think the truth is the only thing we have left to tell, you know. There's so much bullshit in the world.
Well, so how is that experiment going?
Well, I've picked up a book again. I haven't picked up a book in 6 months. Mm-hmm. I sat outside here the other night on my little patio. I sat out there and I actually had a little candle and I read my book, and I haven't done that. I haven't done that in 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like just moments like that. I try to do it before I go to sleep. So I try to do that hour before. And so by the time I am ready to go to sleep, I fall asleep faster. So I've noticed little things like that. And honestly, Grindr, God love it. You know, it is validating as well as, you know, what we have to talk about what Grindr is or isn't, but it really is addictive to kind of keep looking all the time on it. And I've never really hooked up a lot on the apps. It's just not where I come from. It's not how I think. I've done it. It's useful. I'm not saying it's not, but It's for me, it was more about just candy all the time, like looking to see who's there, having people like you, having people tell you you're hot, whatever the validation that we need.
Yeah.
And it's not real in a way. So I don't know. I'm trying to push it away a little bit.
Yeah. Time for a quick ad break. So, as you know, this show is all about spaces. And one of the things that I am particularly interested in exploring is, what are the ingredients to a successful space? Is it about the host? Is it about the people who happen to be there? Is it about the ground rules? Or is it a magical combination of all of the above plus a little bit more? Well, luckily, I have been given the opportunity to find out. I have recently partnered with Spaces, the new group chat app for queer communities. On Spaces, users can set up their own space within the app, and the one that I have set up is called Lost Queer Spaces, where I will be sharing a little more insight from every episode of this show, but I will also be throwing in some vintage nightclub posters, throwback songs, and a whole heap of embarrassing photos from sweaty nights out clubbing. If you want to know more, all you need to do is find Spaces in the App Store, download it, and set up your profile. And don't worry if you're on the go at the moment, I will make sure to include more details as well as a link in the show notes for this episode. So let's get back to the show, but I hope to see you very, very soon on Spaces. So let's go back then, because you said you lost your gay virginity in that bathroom, and then I didn't ask any follow-up questions. Now's the time to give me all the details.
Okay.
Go.
Well, take me back to your semi-traumatic first time.
Oh, no. Oh, I just assumed it was good.
Well.
No, okay.
No. It actually, honestly, it's a math tale, so I had to make sure came across as not scary or not bad, because as soon as you say first time and as soon as you say bathroom floor, people will like be like, oh, sweetheart, are you okay? And I'm like, let me tell you.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm just in the camp where I'm like, yeah, that sounds reasonable. Yeah.
I had not touched a human being. I think my doctor may have maybe examined me with a stethoscope between the ages of 11, 12, and 19. I had not been touched by a human being. I did not want to be touched by a human being. And some other childhood trauma. I won't bring this to a bad place. But I had not been touched, really. I mean, I didn't like to hug. I'm a huge hugger now, and I'm so affectionate. It would be annoying.
I'm going to make a note of that.
To be close to me. But at the time, I just did not want to be touched or hugged or anything. And it was leftover childhood trauma, which is not that out of the ordinary. But anyway, I hadn't been touched by human. Okay. And so I found this restroom. And now remember, if you're not touched by a human between puberty and 19, you're pretty horny. By the time you're 19, also.
Well, are you, though? Are you?
Is
that the natural human response?
I definitely was. But I had my own inner world, it was all inner world. And not to go back to the same thing again, but quickly, there was no porn to watch. And so there was nothing else. I had never seen, except for high school showers, I'd never seen a male body. I'd never touched anybody. And so when I found this bathroom at college and I sensed what was going on, I was so turned on by it, I couldn't think of anything else. I got obsessed with it in my head, and I was terrified to go, but I was very driven to go, which is kind of the old story of how we did it. It was it was scary and thrilling, and you didn't know too much enough to not do it. You weren't scared to not do it, but you were really in the unknown. It was really unknown. And so I wandered into this men's room that I knew was busy in a non-busy time, on a Saturday when classes were not in. And there was a guy, the whole foot tapping thing, and there he was. And so that was my first lesson in foot tapping.
But, just quickly, did you know that foot tapping was a thing? Or was it just that you picked it up?
You pick it up. Okay. Because some of them were really aggressive too. If it was very quiet and there weren't a lot of people in there, you would go in and the foot would just be like, hey, through the stall, hey, let's do this. If it was a Saturday and you were in the basement restroom of a place that wasn't very busy usually, that's why you were there. Yeah. So
no dilly dally.
Yeah. If you're at a JCPenney in a mall, then you're be careful. Might be just some guy tapping, reading. But anyway, I pretty much knew when I went in, he had been sitting there waiting for someone. So I didn't know what he looked like. I knew nothing about him. Mm-hmm. I just knew he was a foot.
He had at least one foot.
And at that point, I had been untouched for so long. I'll touch a foot. That's how horny I was. So he did the tapping, and I could tell he was older. I was 19. Older was 30. He's probably 40. He was a local that was there. And
how could you tell? Because of the type of shoe he was wearing.
Yes. And his leg, it was summer. And his leg, I could just tell he was...
His leg old. Was old looking.
it wasn't 20. It wasn't I could just tell it wasn't a student. You know what I mean? He wasn't... The sneaker was not cool. It was I could just tell. But he had a pretty thick leg, which I could draw to this day. It's crazy. And so I did it. I tapped foot and he tapped back. And then he did his kneel down thing and pushed it under. And I was terrified, and I had also just lost 150 pounds. I came out of my shell. I was on my way out of my shell. I hadn't done much about it yet, but I was oh my God. And so I had the nerve to go and not feel like I felt like I could participate, maybe, even though I didn't know what the fuck I was participating in. And I reached down and I touched his dick, and it was so bizarre to me. It was like a mannequin. Because I'd never touched anyone. So and it was a big kind of waxy.
Waxy?
It was kind of like, I was like touching it and I was like, I don't even... He was kind of like not real. And so I was like touching it and I'm like, all right. And then I got down and I like sucked his dick. And the smell, I don't know if you remember your first time. I'd love to hear it if you did. The first time is so strange because there's so many other things going on. Like you're overthinking it and you're thrilled, but you're not in sync with yourself necessarily in your first time. Mm-hmm. There's so much else that goes with it, you know? And so but I remember sucking his dick and the smell, not bad, just like as a specific smell. And then this gets too graphic. Please stop me or encourage me. It's up to you. Yeah. He actually flipped me around. He like turned me and he like reached under and turned me around. And
how?
He kind of coaxed me. He kind of like coaxed me.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. No, he didn't. He wasn't rough or anything. He just kind of coaxed me around. And I was like, oh, okay. It's hard to believe. I was like, it's just a dumb kid who'd never done or seen anything. And he did, and he turned me around, and he pulled my pants down, and he fucked me on the floor of the bathroom. It took about 30 seconds.
Oh.
And, I mean, or a minute maybe. And I knew what was happening. Like, I knew, but I didn't know. I mean, I didn't know exactly. And I was like, oh, my God. And then he left, and I was, like, sitting there, and I was thinking, am I gay now? Like, does someone come out and give me a gift now, or do I get a card, or like, what's
my ID number?
Do I just crawl to my car, or like, what do I do now? And I'm like, all right, well, I did it. I got it. I get this is what happens. That's what a man's body is, I guess. Here we go.
But so, like, was it not just searing, uncontrollable pain?
It wasn't. It happened really fast. I did see spots. It's so weird, kid, that it's almost like I didn't even know what was going to happen, so I didn't anticipate. It sounds so naive. It was 1984.
Let me take my trousers off, turn around, and put my butt under this stool. I wonder what might happen.
Well, I knew, but I didn't know what the feeling like, if I did it now and I would be like, oh my gosh, what's this? Then you could call me on. But like, but it was in 1984 when I was like 19 and so naive. I mean, it didn't feel bad. And then it happened. And I was like, I did see black spots for a second. I was like, what the fuck? And then it was over really fast, which is probably not uncommon for a lot of first times to be like fast and awkward and not like so beautiful. And maybe just the difference is most people wouldn't tell that story. but it was, and you know, that's my story. I'm not ashamed of it. It's just, you know.
Well, no, there's nothing to be ashamed of. Yeah. But so were you lying, this stool thing, I don't really get. So were you lying between the two cubicles?
Yes.
Okay.
On my stomach, on a men's room floor, romantic. So romantic.
I don't get angles here.
He pulled me back under his. So my, like, from my chest up was still on my side, and the rest of me was back on his side. And then he just laid out flat on top of me.
Oh, okay.
He was able to get, like...
Enough of you back.
Yes. Okay. Yep, and then it was over.
And so after that, like, when you shimmied back into your own cubicle, or into his, potentially, to leave, what was the feeling?
I think all the feelings. I think the answer is all of them. I was so turned on. I didn't come.
Well, you didn't have time to come.
I didn't have time, yeah. Or stay to do it after. I was on the wrong side. And but I do remember pulling myself back through. I didn't like the feeling of being there alone after. It felt really weird to me. Like, it suddenly didn't feel sexy to me. It felt, like, sad. Or I felt, like, a little lonely and sad that I was there by myself on the floor. Then it suddenly occurred to me, like, this maybe isn't how I would necessarily want this. You know,
is there a shame element there?
I guess so. You know, there was a lot in my head. I remember some of it, some of it I don't.
Well, it is 1984. Sorry.
It was, but it was a pretty strong moment. You know, I do remember walking out after happy that it happened.
Uh-huh.
I do remember that. And then I do remember masturbating a lot about it for a long time because I'd had sex, sort of.
Yeah, I think it counts.
I guess. I mean, let's count it. Me clutching the toilet while someone's pounding me on the floor of a men's room. Yeah, beautiful. But who did I have to tell? No one. Not a soul.
And having it be a secret is kind of more thrilling, isn't it?
Yes. And I fed on that. That secrecy, not just secret within your own group, because I was still upstate and still in my little town, even though there was college student. There's still, it was, you know, I was still a hometown kid in my head for a long time. There was nobody to tell. I had no gay circle. And then there was no social circle. There was no social media. So I couldn't have friends, you know, on Instagram to tell. I couldn't. There's no one else. I had no community. There was no extended community either. So that kind of, that was, it's funny that you said thrill. It was such a thrilling time for me. I remember feeling isolated, but the thrill of it was kind of amazing because I think the first time I ever had that kind of relationship with myself, you know, like I had something I was doing and sharing for me that I'd never done before. And it was kind of, it was like bad boy version of such, I was always such a good boy. And I think it was this bad boy thing that I actually thought I was being my own friend finally. Like I was like giving us adventures, you know?
And do you mean by that, like the good boy was the thing that you did for everybody else?
Yes.
The bad boy was the thing you did for yourself.
Yes, that's exactly it. And that split in me, which is, I wouldn't, you know, it's not ideal. That split in me really stayed with me until my 40s.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I was not comfortable bringing the two together until my 40s. And really just the last few years when I'm the same guy all the time now. It was until after 50, honestly, that I felt like I was me all the time.
Can I ask follow-up questions?
Of course.
May I ask follow-up questions? Sorry.
Of course.
Using improper English. Do you mean that there were just two very distinct parts of your life that you didn't let seep into one another? Or
yes.
Do you mean something else?
No, that's what I mean. And I kept them separate because I think I even said this to you when we first chatted about being lurky, you know? I got very good at being lurky, to lurk around and to find things and to have that life at night or in a bathroom or with a stranger or, you know, any time I got very good at that. And I think that I got addicted to the thrill of that as well. And then, you know, I had a girlfriend for a while and then I had my first gay relationship at late 20s is when I really came out.
Oh.
So, and I had boyfriends, but they were like sweet boyfriends and they knew a little bit about what I'd done before, but I didn't have open relationships. I had my first ones very monogamous and very kind of old fashioned. I let them choose me, all those things we do in relationships when we start. And so I kept those two parts of me very separate for a very long time. That was how I was comfortable doing it.
And did you think that, I have two questions actually.
Sure.
Do you think that you couldn't be a hoe bag and be intimate and in a loving relationship?
Yes, I did. I wrestled with it a little bit. Between each relationship, I'm 57 and I've had five relationships. So I try to hang in there with them. I like being in a relationship. I like it. So when I'm in one, I'm pretty committed to it. I had one longer term one that was kind of open. We played together outside. We would do other things and play together, but I can never bring the two. I can never bring the two together, even in my own self, how I presented myself, and so it was very hard. You know, it's hard to work on yourself and a relationship at the same time. And I think what was going on was I was trying to do both things at the same time, and it just didn't. It was hard for me.
And so going back to this thing about the bad boy and the good boy, and the bad boy was for you and the good boy was for everyone else, does that mean that when you were in a relationship, you didn't feel like you had the things to let go or to do things for yourself?
I had a couple different versions of it. And as I got older, it definitely evolved. Things kind of mixed certain times, then they would divide again and mix and divide. And it's only in like the last 5 years or more that I feel like I'm just who I am now all the time. When I present, if I was going to be a partner with someone, they would know all about me and I would want them to be here with me and do all. But although the bad boy part of me did it kind of shamelessly, and I didn't carry it around. Like, after I would do all those things, I wouldn't be devastated for days after a gangbang. I wouldn't be devastated. I'd be turned on.
Why would you be?
Thank you. I mean, even from 1984 on, I always felt kind of a thrill about it. So that bad boy thing wasn't just a reaction to shame. It was more, I think it was more about being accepted than it was shame, you know? And the funny thing is, though, so here's the kind of key to the last couple of years that I felt I had to keep it to myself. I felt that it wasn't acceptable or whatever. And then the more people I've met and the more people, once you actually come out, this has been coming out again for me to tell these personal stories. It's been like coming out again. And so once I've done that, I've had so many people respond and say like, yeah, me too. Or yeah, this. It's like, I also think the people that I was surrounding myself with, I could have done it differently. I could have had much more of a unified self if I just allowed myself to be around the people that were more like me. Interesting, huh?
I don't want to belabor this, but I'm going to ask a follow-up question. So talking about the shame and not having the shame, but also knowing somewhere within yourself that you shouldn't share it, was that because your aspiration, your goal, your thing that you wanted to do was be in a loving relationship, and you thought that you wouldn't be able to find anyone that wanted to be monogamous, that wanted to have that loving intimacy, that would also accept that side of you?
I think so. And definitely earlier on, for sure. Uh-huh. I remember my first boyfriend ever, I tried to express some of those things. He just like shut me down. And I was like, oh. You know, he had done porn when he was young and he had trauma from it. And so anything too sexual for him triggered him, which now I see it's his trigger, not my trigger. But of course, absorbed it and then tried to be a better boy and whatever. And so that didn't, of course, it didn't work. But I think over the years, for sure, I've been checking myself. And then, of course, a lot of us go rebound, right? We go from one, not all of us, but I did. I kind of go from one extreme of kind of who I was hanging out to another. Yeah. And so, you know, I had a few years ago, I got married briefly, didn't last. I did. I married a Hare Krishna monk. I had a time of like the good boy kind of took over and decided that that's who I was going to be all the time. And I knew it wouldn't work, but I gave it a shot.
Was that part of your vows? I know this isn't going to work, but I'm going to give it a shot.
Yeah, I don't remember saying that at the ceremony, but I remember thinking it. My silent vows.
At the ceremony. Oh, Matt. Oh.
I know. I was in a sherwani and a turban and garlands and the whole thing. I jumped over the fire. Like, I committed, you know. And then he left 17 weeks later. Another story. But what I did get out of that was that I could have a spiritual self also and have an inner peace that also could go along with the bad boy. Like, I think it's the final thing that cracked that good boy, bad boy, that there's not really such a thing, you know? It's just being like a human being or being a gay man or having experiences in the gay world, which are not always easy. Yeah, we get a lot of really good stuff out of it, but it's also not easy. So I think once I accepted that, like, I'm in that world, it's not so personal, you know? It's not so personal. But we all go through these things.
It isn't just that. It's like our culture's whole response to sex, right? And it's not, I mean, there's probably an extra layer that the queer community feel because their sexual interests, desires, like have a bit more scrutiny from the external world than heterosexual acts. But everyone is conditioned to think like, if I enjoy sex, there is something inherently wrong with me, and therefore I shouldn't enjoy sex, or I should just not tell anyone, and it's something I have to keep to myself.
Yeah.
So let's go back to that cubicle in that bathroom in that university. You had your first experience, and it unlocked something within you. Sorry, that sounds so ridiculous. You were the faggy phoenix rising from the ashes. Did you go back?
Yes. I went back to the same place. at the same, like, same day, next, the next week. I went back to the same time. Uh-huh. No one's ever asked me that. that's a great question. I've never asked me that, actually. I did. I went back again, and then and nothing happened. I don't think nothing.
And so you purposely went back on a day when you mm-hmm. thought it wasn't going to be busy.
I went back on the day that I had gone, the exact same day that it happened, hoping, I guess, that it would happen again.
With the same man?
I didn't know how it worked. I thought he was the Saturday at 2 o'clock shift. I don't know. I didn't know. I knew nothing. And so I think I went through my period of week of probably, I'm going to guess, that I drove myself crazy with it, probably. I probably was very turned on by it, scared by it, probably yeah. told myself I'd never do that again, probably convinced myself that there was something bad about it or dangerous or something, you know, that I shouldn't do that. Mm-mm. And I'm sure all of that got me so worked up that I went back the next week at the same time. And I mean, I can tell you it didn't happen twice with that person. But I may have stumbled onto something else, or I got brave, and then I started to get braver, and I would go. Then the thrill I had to keep upping the thrill a little bit, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I went during class time, during a very busy middle of the week, I would leave my lecture hall class and I would go down the hallways. And then it would be very busy, but it would also be guys just peeing. So it was like extra, it was like a little dangerous too. And so I started to do that. And then I met someone who really knew how to work the underground system over there. And there were other restrooms within that lecture hall that were like smaller or private or whatever, but they were all underneath the lecture hall. And so I learned where like the hidden bathrooms were or the private ones were. And so you could meet someone. I told you it was like a bathhouse. You meet someone and you take them to the room. And so you could meet someone in that bigger bathroom and you could say, like, follow me.
Ah.
And so that's what I did for a long time.
And so would you meet them via mm-hmm. this understall system? Yep. And then...
Yes. Okay. And then you would either like point to let go, or you would pass a note. We actually wrote on little pieces of paper and pass them onto the stall. You didn't sit on the stalls and just see who's in proximity on Grindr of like 5 feet or less. Like you do in bars now, just saying. No, I passed little pieces of paper. And then that was a thrill too, because you would write things like, fuck me, question mark, you know, like follow me. It was crazy. It was so thrilling.
But so, like, if they followed you and then you saw them, did that not take away the thrill?
So you could, when you were, left this part out, when you would go into these bathrooms, what I didn't know at first, which I learned quickly, is you walk the line of them. You walk the line and you look in between. you kind of look.
Okay.
And if you know that that's the mood of what's going on in there, you can literally like look through. Yes, no, yes, no. You can do like a quick little like jaunt and then pretend to be at the urinal and then come back. And then so you kind of get to see. And the other thing is you could hook up in there first. Like someone would actually open their door. Even if there were other guys cruising in there, they were in the stalls, people would open their door and let you come in with them. It was that open. No exaggeration.
Wow.
Yeah. No one could record you. No one was going to tell on you. Once in a while, like, and the students didn't tell on each other. They didn't. It's just a different time. Different time. Yeah.
So what do you think cruising has taught you about life?
Oh, it's good. I have an answer for that. A couple of things. One is how to go out and have an adventure that's not written, uncharted. You know, it's like kind of a real adventure is when you really kind of don't know what's going to happen. You just have to use all your senses and everything you learn to kind of just do your best and be safe. But you actually don't know. You don't always know what's going to happen. And that can be a vacation now or it can be other things. But it did teach me that. The other is how to communicate with guys through body language, through eye contact.
With your feet?
With your feet. Honestly, don't get me started on that. I have a story about that. A very well-known pop singer's drummer tried to fuck me with his foot, and that's a whole other show.
Pop singer.
That's just gossip. Now I'm just gossiping.
Yeah, I find that fascinating, by
I thought
the way.
You would.
Like, I've never seen any porn or anything with someone putting their foot up someone else's ass. But I always think about, like, what if the pressure breaks the bones in your feet?
Nate, you're worried about the foot.
Well, yeah, okay, yeah.
That is a very top point of view, by the way.
Well, I just know that I would never invite someone's foot into my ass, so I'm always picturing me being
the person. Mm-hmm, yeah, sure, okay. Yeah. See, when you started saying, like, I thought it was going to break, and I'm like, I know the pressure would be, and you're like, the foot. I'm like, clearly, we just picked our sides for the foot episode. Yeah, he tried to do that, and then he sang me a song he was writing with her and after, and then it just got weirder and weirder, and then I left.
Wait, whilst his foot was in you, he sang you a song.
It was just weird. The whole thing was so weird. Well, no, it was right after.
So what pop singer has brought a song out about feet? Let me try and figure this out.
He actually tried, and I, like, was so thrown off by it. I thought he was, like, tickling me again. I don't know. It was a long time ago. I don't know what I was doing. I'm like, oh, that's cute. You're tickling me with your... Oh, okay. So I stopped him after a second, and then we hung out for a minute because it was weird, and then he sang me a song.
Oh, so it didn't go all the way in?
No. No, I would not. I was not.
Well, because, and the other thing about it is, like, you've got so much less control over your foot. Like, it's not like with your hand where you know, like, how to move things.
That's right.
Fingers independently. It's just like, I'm going to jam it in and see what happens.
I was not up for that, nor have I ever been since. No judgments on foot fucking, but I.
Yeah, no, no.
But no,
no,
I, yeah. Yeah.
Just the practicalities are the barriers for me.
Yeah, it really...
But you know, where there's a will.
Where there's a will, there's a foot, as the saying goes.
So, sorry, you were going to tell me the third...
Oh, what was the third thing? The third thing from cruising... Oh, the third thing from cruising that I've learned that was... It's been invaluable to me is you don't always know what someone's thinking. I've learned so much about what guys like... And verified and felt kind of like, I don't know if it was like, it was nice to have people like what I like, even though I thought what I liked, I was the only one. There was something about connecting with someone, not necessarily like reading the menu of the things that they liked, which can be bullshit or not. Mm-hmm. It's actually like discovering while you're with someone or touching or in proximity of them, something, it's very intimate to me is what I'm trying to say. Like, it's very intimate to find out someone is thrilled by something that you're thrilled by or that likes something you like or can show you something that you didn't know. And that immediate proximity when you're first sniffing hormones and you're first reacting to just another guy's presence, which can be so, you know, your body responds, right? Your senses respond and your body responds. And then have that justification of something you like or learn. That is such a thrill to me. And so I think one thing I've gotten from that is I kind of wonder what guys are thinking now. And I give them the benefit of the doubt sometimes, you know, I think, wow, you know, I wonder what turns him on or if I like this, someone else will like this too. Or it made me feel a little more connected, even though it's to a stranger, if that makes any sense. Yeah, it was justifying to me of like the weird things that I think. Because remember, when you had nothing to look up, when you had no one else telling you, I mean, no matter what you like now, the foot thing, when if you go on and Google this after you Google foot sex, you're going to find.
I'm doing it now.
But, you know, you're going to find a lot. You'll find a lot. You'll find a lot. And yeah. So I do think there was something about the discovery. That intimate discovery with someone else that makes me less afraid of guys. It makes me a little bit more confident that they're not going to think I'm strange for liking something or they're not going to reject me or if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Cruiser.
Yeah, it was good practice in that way.
Thank you, old man's leg in the bathroom stall. Do you have any memories of meeting fine gentlemen under cubicle toilet doors, or, you know, maybe something a bit more vanilla, like memories of clubbing from your own queer scene that you want to share? Well, either way, I want to hear from you, so get in touch. Go to lostspacespodcast.com and find the section Share a Lost Space to tell me all about what it is you got up to. You can also reach out to me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where my handle is Lost Spaces Pod. Find out more about Matt Tales by visiting his website, matttales.com, following him on Instagram, Matt Tales Gay Adventures, or, you know, just listening to his show wherever you stream podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate if you subscribed or followed or did whatever it is you do in the app that you're using. Leave a review on your podcast platform, or just tell other people who you think might be interested and want to listen to it too. I am Kay Anderson, and you have been listening to Lost Spaces.